Hi, everybody. It's Diane, and it is Tuesday, December 2nd, and this is the Noon Group. Happy belated Thanksgiving to everybody. We're so glad that you're here with us. And got a few folks on the call. And we always start by just doing a quick check-in and see how things have been going since the last time we get together. We got together 2 weeks ago, and we were talking about systems and structures. So I'm curious how things have been going. Who wants to check in first? Oh,
well, this is Ellen, so I guess I'll check
okay.
in.
So
things have been going fairly well this past, I guess, 2 weeks. However, we're not in our normal pattern because he was having midterms, so there was no specific homework to deal with. I assume he was studying. So it was fairly calm, and then he was off for 5 days. And things are pretty calm. He gets pretty sluggish when he's off and doesn't want to do a lot. But he's at that age that's kind of 16. So it was a fairly quiet 2 weeks. There wasn't a lot that I had to deal with, which was a good thing. But it wasn't a typical 2 weeks either. So
what did you've had vacations and downtime like this before. What did you notice was different this time?
Well, he still does not want to take any medication when he's not at school, which is still a little bit of I've let him make that decision. But I do notice the social difference with him and how he can be annoying to other people. But I tried to let, when he would start to get a little irritating, with other people, just kind of be like, hey, Austin, you know, he's starting to notice. Let's put it that way. I guess before he wouldn't notice, he is starting to notice. And maybe it's just me kind of saying like a slight comment, not a negative, but like, you know, you might want to come down a little bit or, you know, I'm not sure your cousin Melissa understands what you're talking about because he'll, you know, kind of go off on something that he understands that nobody else does. And I think that's somewhat maturity and somewhat me. I used to get really irritated and kind of, you know, be like, you're acting really weird and nobody's going to want to be friends with you when you're acting like this. And I don't do that anymore. I just, you know, he's got to be who he is and people do have to accept him. And I can suggest he take medication because I do think it makes a difference. But he's going to, you know, he's becoming an adult in some ways and has to make those decisions. So I think my reaction is different.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And first, congratulations, because it's hard to do that. But the tool that you're using is mirroring. And it's just kind of like you're just sharing with him what you're seeing. You're doing it without judgment. And it's just kind of like, hey, I don't think your cousin got what you said. Did you notice that? You know, so it's just kind of more observing on their behalf. Because a lot of times they don't see what's going on. So I think it's a great tool to use, Ellen. Good for you. All right, who else wants to check in? Teresa, how have things been going for you?
Things have been going okay. I wasn't able to on the call last time, but I did actually listen to the recording, and there was a lot of really good, helpful stuff. We had done, we actually went and saw a new psychologist in that time period, and what we had done with her kind of played into that systems and structures where we started a new thing with homework where we were very consistent about chunking it. So he gets to decide if he wants to work 15 or 20 minutes, and then he'll work for that time period, and then he gets a five-minute break. And then in the five-minute break, he can do anything that he wants that is not electronic, you know, TV, computer, video games, or whatever. And then he goes back and works another 15 or 20 and then gets the break. And he has done really well with that. So that's been really motivating. It's just me. It's really more me being better about setting the timer and keeping up with the chunking. But we've seen a lot of progress with that. So
is.
That helps.
Great.
So I need to start setting
up,
you know,
it's this great balance of him owning it and you owning it and finding a way to kind of, you know, help him to be accountable and help him to, you know, control the situation. And I like that you picked one area because it makes it easier to start and just, okay, let's just use one timer, one time period, and set yourself up for success that way. Good job.
Well, thanks.
All right. I see Krista joined us. Hey, Krista.
Hello. How are you?
Good. You want to do a quick check-in?
yes, I apologize for being late. I had to... As soon as I was on my way home from dropping Miles off, and apparently he slipped in a mud puddle and had mud all over his pants, so I had to go back to school and give him some fresh pants. So that's how my day started. I think just generally we had we've switched Miles' meds, and it's been we sort of gave him a 2-week vacation, and then of just slowly putting him on Strattera, and I'm just really pleased with his progress, although it's been, you know, we can see that he's sort of flying without a net sometimes, but I guess what I really appreciate is his ability to kind of articulate what's happening for him, and I'm proud of him for that. I'm anxious today because we have a parent-teacher conference, which are always very interesting. We're having a relatively good school year, but given that he was off meds for the last 2 weeks, I think we may find some other things have come up. I think I'll always be anxious for parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's pretty normal, Chris. I think you're in good company with, I'm sure, you're in good company with me, and I'm sure other people on the call as well. It's not the easiest. It's easy to get anxious about it. What's your intention as you go in with the conversation?
You know, I have really taken your advice to heart and really worked to cultivate relationships with the special ed teacher and his regular teacher, and feel like that's a key part of the success. And so I'm trying to see, to really sort of believe that cultivation and that faith and the work that we've done to do that is going to pay off. And so far it really has. Like, you know, as soon as we took him off meds, I emailed the school, I emailed his teacher and the special ed, and I said, here's what's going on with him. This is what the game plan is. Here's the new medication. It's going to take a while to get into the system. You know, and all along they've just been really appreciative of that. And so my intention is really just to continue to look at the places where Miles is not succeeding and to strategize with them about how we can support him in getting him to success.
Right.
But I think we start differently than other things, where the teacher and the special ed teacher really have faith in Miles, whereas I didn't see that in our last school and in our last efforts. It was always like, you know, it was always from a deficit place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm
but
really
I'm sure
hopeful.
That makes you feel it makes it easier to find ways to collaborate when you know that they have a similar viewpoint of, you know, his ability or inability or willingness, that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, I have to believe that you care about my kid, and I have to believe that, you know, you can see him for the fullness of who he is. And if I can't see that in you, it's really hard for me to consider you part of the team.
Exactly. Awesome. Okay. Stacey, how have things been going for you?
Particularly difficult overall month, I'd say. My 13-year-old has always been very moody, and I feel like all the through help and the psychologist and the psychiatrist, I think we're starting to put puzzle pieces together that are very difficult to deal with, I think, in our family. But he's just his moods have become more labile, and it looks as if it might be taking a turn towards the bipolar world, and it's very scary. And so I haven't done anything with the group for over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm just trying to deal with this information, trying to find the right medication, which is scary too, you know.
Well, and there's so many different pieces of this that it's, I'm sure you're wondering, how do I know and who do I trust and that sort of stuff. I'm hoping that you're...
Right. This is our fourth round of finding, and we feel that we've found the right people.
Good.
And very conservative psychiatrists in terms of drugs and experience. So it's just scary.
Well,
and
just make sure that you're getting some support for yourself, Tracy, because it is tough, and it's easy to feel like you're all alone and you're having to make tough decisions. So, you know, make sure you're reaching out and getting
right.
There was a great article I had read on your page this last week, because my son also, he's definitely diagnosed with depression, and then I question often whether he's bipolar, and there was a really good article on your page this past week about a journey that I guess a family had about that.
Thank you for sharing that, Ellen. I've forgotten so much. I forget what gets posted on a week-by-week basis. No, you're right. There was that article out there about mental illness and how to that sort of thing. So thank you for sharing that. Appreciate that. Okay. So, Victoria, just a quick check-in. You know, what are some of the key challenges that you have at home, and what made it? Because Victoria is new, just so the group knows. Victoria is new to the group?
Yes. First of all, what I'm hearing so far, I'm already feeling so much better because I feel like I'm amongst my people, you know, all dealing with the same situation. I am just slowly getting through the program. I'm actually a module 5 right now on the positive parenting, and November was really difficult. We had a rash of viruses, and I came down with pneumonia, so... I was really sick for about 3 weeks, and my husband had to step in and do the whole parenting thing for a while, which was rough because he's not as patient or as understanding about the whole, of everything that we're dealing with. And so I guess for the first couple calls, I'll probably... you know, just listen, and as I'm going through the program, take comfort in that support of knowing that I'm not alone. But my son, like I said, he has Tourette's syndrome as well as ADHD. So, it throws in a few challenges there in terms of tics and behavior. Luckily, he has incredible support at school. he's right now going only half days. Because that's pretty much all he can handle before, you know, he has a lot of sensory issues as well. So, I'm just trying to find all the tools that I can and try to help him as much as I can. But since I'm just sort of getting started with this coaching program, I don't want to take up too much time because there's a lot going on my end over here.
Well, I know, and I appreciate that, and it can be overwhelming. I think we've all been there where it's just kind of like there's so much to this, and one of the things I think that we try to do really well in this group is to, we call it taking aim, and so you want to focus on one particular area, and that's a great segue, because I think at this stage in the call, let's all take aim. Let's figure out kind of what we want to focus in on for the next couple of weeks. The topic today, we're going to talk about triggers and emotional intensity. For ourselves, we're going back to the first critical response area, which is activating the brain. and this is one of my favorite topics, but I just kind of introduce that because as you take aim, you might want to take aim on a particular area that is a trigger for you or is a trigger for your child. So take a minute, make a note, let me know, and then let's just quickly, you know, one sentence on what you're going to take aim on. Let's go back through the group if we can. Krista, can you go first?
Can I not?
Yeah, sure.
I need a second. Thank you. I'm sorry.
For my quick
I'm still in the mud.
Okay. When somebody's ready, let me know.
So when you say triggers, this is Victoria. Do you mean things that you know bother you the most, I guess?
Well, you don't have to. What we want to do in terms of taking aim is we want to identify one particular challenge, and mm-hmm. focus in on coming up with an action plan for a particular challenge. It's kind of the way we frame the call. I mentioned triggers because that's what we're going to talk about today. So if there's something that kind of gets your goat or notice that really throws you off balance personally, or you know that really kind of, you know, sets your child into an emotional meltdown, that might be an area to find and focus in on in terms of taking aim. Does that make better sense?
Yes.
Great.
So this is Ellen, and today is early December, and this time of year, I tend to get very stressed over all the holiday stuff, and I love it and I want to do it, but I've decided as my kids are older that I really need to de-stress, because it just, especially with my son with depression, ADHD, I think when I get stressed, he tends to go over the moon. So I just feel like this year I just need to pick like one or two things that are important and not worry about everything else.
So you're going to take aim on managing your own priorities and stress level
yeah.
over the next several weeks so that you can help, and also that will help your son to kind of stay calm through finals and the holidays and everything else. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, who's next? Stacy?
Hi, it's Stacy. I know that my son's triggers are whenever we say no. And I know it sounds crazy, but I just, given the whole last few weeks, I understand why he goes crazy. But are any kind of change in plans? So maybe I will pick something in that, like if we have a different food that we're serving, or the whole meal thing is such an issue for some odd reason with him. So I'm going to try to nail that food being a trigger, or planning it, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense that if it throws him off balance, then it's put in on. Teresa, what about you?
And there's so many things that set me off or set him off. I'm kind of having a hard time deciding where I want to start. But I'm kind of thinking sometimes he gets real worked up about when we go to church. Church is not his favorite thing. It's hard for him to sit there. You know, I understand that. And it's not always the most, you know, interesting thing. We go to a more traditional church, but my thought is that maybe my husband and I need to get our act together and decide early in the week when we're going to go, so that he can be better prepared, instead of, you know, if we go Saturday evening and we say to him at 3 in the afternoon, oh, by the way, we're going at 5, or, you know, tomorrow we're going at 9 or whatever. That's kind of what I'm thinking. And then
yeah,
seeing
so
if
I
that
guess I'm curious. Can I ask you, Teresa, is so Was there a particular reason you chose a trigger for him as opposed to a trigger for you?
Well, just because I mean, I definitely have triggers, and especially when I'm tired or stressed out, then I can go. But I feel like I've been doing better about not going off so much. Maybe coinciding, I'm doing a Bible study right now that is really focusing on starting every day with prayer and how that can just totally change the whole way your day starts. So before I leave my bedroom, I spend time in prayer, and it's been amazing how much more at peace I am, and I feel like I deal better with things. So I feel like I am kind of working on that, maybe from a different angle, and so that's why I'm kind of interested in helping, seeing if we can get this whole negative stuff about church out of the way.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, no, so you're going to take aim on Tim, which will enable you to kind of at least tackle an area that seems pretty straightforward for you, and then maybe teach you a tool in a way that'll you'll be able to apply it, you know, for other situations as well.
Good.
What did I miss? Krista, where are you taking aim?
I want to take aim at sort of somewhat tied to, I think somebody else mentioned, whenever sort of the answer to his strong desire is no. I think we both have a pattern where I get triggered with the disrespect, and then he gets triggered with the disrespect that I show him. And so, because respect is a family value, we struggle with that a lot.
Right. You know he has a hard time with no, but then when you tell him no, he gets upset. You see it as disrespect, which triggers you, and then it's a hot mess.
Right, and then he feels disrespected too.
Right, exactly. Great. Well, it sounds like a good area, and you're really pretty clear on what you're going to focus in on.
Yeah.
So, Victoria, kind of looping back to you, when you think about kind of what you want to take aim on.
Okay. Mornings are my trigger at the moment. When my son is not, his medication is not quite on board, and it just his behavior when he's rebounding from medication as well in the afternoon. So just that whole period of time where he's not medicated fully is a big, big trigger for me. And
tell me specifically, what is it about it that gets you triggered?
Well, it's just his behavior is so completely out of control. I have this internal battle in my head of, you know, you're 8 years old. Why are you acting like a 1-year-old, or why are you acting like a 2-year-old? And so this constant battle of, you know, I know that he has a problem. I know that there's a reason why he's on medication. But somewhere in the back of my head, I still have this voice of, oh, no, you're not going to be acting this way, you know, even when I know that he can't help it. So it's this constant battle in my own head of trying to keep things sort of under control. How much should I allow him to sort of go wacky, and how much do I need to rein him in? And, oh, it's a really, really, really big problem in our house.
That makes sense. Okay, great. So let me switch to content here. So let me talk a little bit about triggers. We're on chapter session 7, page 28 of the workbook. And as I mentioned, we're going back to the first critical response area, activating the brain. We've been through all 4 of them at this point, and we're going to loop back through and talk a little bit more specifically about 4 other tools that we want to focus in on that can be really helpful. And managing triggers is really important because for most of us, one of the biggest challenges is us losing our cool in a situation, because we know that when we're triggered, when we're trying to parent from a place of being off balance, that we don't parent the way that we want to. You know, either we completely check out and we're like, oh, I can't deal with this. I'm going to go climb in my bed and run away and hide. Or we end up getting, like Krista mentioned, you get angry, you get frustrated, you get into conflict with your child when you know that the conflict may not be helpful. And what's happening from a biological perspective when a trigger takes place is that, you know, the part of our brain that, you know, the problem-solving part of our brain shuts down. We go into fight or flight. And so we're really acting more from an animalistic kind of place than we are from a problem-solving, creative, you know, parenting, engaged parent sort of place. And the same thing is happening with our kids. When our kids get triggered, then their brain tends to shut down. The problem-solving part of their brain shuts down. They go into fight or flight. And it's really you're fighting biology here. And so I want to start by saying that, which is that this isn't something that we're necessarily choosing. It's a natural, complete reaction to a stressful, a perceived threat in your life, whether it's because your kid's going crazy in the morning or whether it's because you're saying no to your child. That trigger is very real. And we all have triggers, and we all have the things that push our buttons. The good news is, however, that it's your button or it's their button, and so that there's some possibility, and because we don't all get triggered by the same sorts of stuff, although there's some pretty universal sorts of things that tend to trigger us, that gives us the possibility to know that there might be something we could do instead of just reacting to that trigger and going into that fight or flight. We might want to do something different. So I'm going to talk today both about prevention and then also management. And so with any trigger, it's really important to do what you can to prevent it. And I'll have parents spend time really kind of creating a trigger log. We had one of my parents who their daughter was having a really difficult time with emotional intensity, and she was having meltdowns periodically. And I said, okay, just go for the next week and write down what was happening just before every time that they had a meltdown over the next, you know, however many weeks. And when they came back, they went, oh, she's melting down when she's hungry, and she's melting down after school when she's really tired. And it was just simply understanding and noticing that that was what was going on. They could say, okay, well, maybe I need to make sure that that she has enough food after school, or maybe I need to give her some space to try to rest after school and get some energy back up. But just kind of noticing the situations, and a couple of you said that you know that the word no is a trigger for your kids. So you already are aware. You can't really prevent necessarily everything when you need to say no to your child. Sometimes you really do need to say no to your child. It's not like you can just say, okay, I'm never going to say no to my child. It doesn't usually work for most of us. But, you know, the word no, and in fact, I know this is Elaine happens to have a child who has a really difficult time with the word no, and so she uses a code word in that instance. And I think I've talked about code words. I don't know if I've talked about it in this group, but a prevention tool, if you know that a trigger is coming, is to, you know, use some other form of communication, like a code word where you say, the code word they use is, I think, bubblegum. So when Elaine needs to say no or disappoint her son, I think it's her son that has a problem with the word no, she'll say bubblegum, which means get ready, I need to tell you something that you're not going to want to hear. And so it's just kind of a way of getting him ready and prepared so that he knows that, you know, he can avoid the trigger if possible. And so we talked last week about transitions, or last time about transitions, and about how hard it is for our kids to transition in and out of situations, and disappointment and frustration with a decision is just another transition challenge. So our kids have a difficult time signing off the computer or turning off the TV. They have a difficult time when they're doing something or want to do something and their brain is going in a particular direction, and we say no and we have to take them in a different direction. So the first thing is kind of really knowing and understanding triggers, both our own and our kids. And you can do your own trigger journal, which is kind of like, when I get upset, what are the things that get me upset? I know for me, for example, one of my big triggers is the online grading system. And it's like it just terrifies me to go in there because I don't want to see any zeros. I don't want to see any Fs. I don't want to see any, you know, all those things that you kind of make up that you're going to see when you go in there. And I know that it's a trigger for me even to just turn on that part of the computer. So my prevention is that my son, who's 15, is in charge of going into the online system and reporting back to me what he sees. And he prints everything out and he walks it to me with his solution. By the time I even see it, he's already been through it. He knows what's there, and he can come back and say, this is what I'm going to do about it, which, number one, holds him accountable but avoids my trigger, because I don't get as triggered by him telling me as I do by the computer itself telling me. So that's prevention. The other thing is management. So when we talk about trigger management, and one of the things we teach in Minimize Meltdowns is the four-step process for trigger management. So the first thing is, you know, recognize the trigger, know what the threat is. And so, again, it comes back to journaling or paying attention and just kind of really getting clear on what triggers us and what's really going on. The second step is to reclaim your brain. And so when you get triggered, you want to do something to reactivate the problem-solving part of your brain. So if you're starting to go into fight or flight, or you've gone into fight or flight, you want to do something to get back. So for most of us, that's taken a few deep. Might be you know, taking yourself out of the situation for a minute, going and, you know, removing, taking a time out. I have a lot of clients who use water as a, you know, taking a few sips of water. Water really chemically does something differently in your brain, like taking a few deep breaths. You really want to reclaim your brain from a chemical perspective. And you want to do the same thing for our kids. And so if they're triggered, the first thing you want to focus in on is helping them to get back into problem-solving mode. A lot of times when we see our kid get triggered, our first idea is to kind of keep going at them with either the thing that triggered them or to get them to stop triggering. And so we, you know, what job number one needs to be is to help your kid to calm down. And so if you've got a younger kid, that might be, you know, helping them to go take a timeout, not a timeout like if they've been, they're punished, but just kind of like, okay, let's take a break, let's take a few minutes and come back and talk about this. Or if you know that, you know, they've got a favorite stuffed animal that calms them down. With older kids, it might be, okay, let's separate and come back in 15 minutes. And you might make an agreement to say, we're both upset, let's come back. So you want to do something. First is to recognize the trigger. Second is to reclaim your brain. Third is to choose a different perspective. And so when you've been triggered and you're in fight or flight, it's about finding another way of looking at the situation that's going to help you to problem solve. And so there's a lot of articles on the site and things that say, you know, kind of how do I look at the situation differently? How do I focus in on what my child needs rather than what they did wrong that triggered me? So you really want to choose a different way of looking at the situation. And then the fourth thing is that you want to act from that new perspective. So, for example, if you get triggered, I'm trying to think of something that triggered me this morning. Something triggers me every morning. I got triggered this morning. My son and I had our current challenge is that he is using electronics inappropriately, like using his phone at 1 in the morning to text his friends instead of just leaving it in his room for an alarm clock. And so I this morning got up and noticed that he had done it again, and, you know, it was really easy to kind of jump in, and I would have, you know, been really mad because this has happened more than once. And instead, I, you know, took a few deep breaths and went, okay, you know, what reclaimed my brain? What's my perspective? My perspective is that it's really not realistic for my son to have his phone in his room at night, period. He can't avoid the temptation as much as he wants to say that he can. At this point, it's difficult for him. And so I decided, and I'll talk to him when we're both not triggered, that he's no longer going to be able to have his phone in his bedroom as an alarm. He's going to have to find some other solution for that waking up. So, again, it's like I knew what my trigger was. I reclaimed my brain. I chose a different perspective, and I moved forward from that perspective. So that triggers, in a nutshell, a lot of stuff there, but I'm curious what you guys think about the topic and what comes up for you.
So this is Krista. I think I've talked to you before, but one of the things that I know that helps me reclaim my brain is space from him And that scares him.
Oh, yeah. So you say, okay, I need some space, and then he comes chasing after you, and it triggers him.
Right. He I don't know if it's adoption or fear of abandonment or whatever issue it is, whenever I'm trying to sort of say, okay, I need to go catch my breath, and I need to do that more so alone.
So,
like, I need to walk into my room and, like, just maybe have 5 minutes in there.
Yeah, so you mentioned that we've talked about this before. Do you want to share with the group what you've tried, or do you want me to kind of give you a...
You know, I have tried to reassure him that this is a way that I can come back and be with him in a more positive way. I have told him I'm not going anywhere. I'm just simply, like, telling him literally I'm trying to reclaim my brain. He thinks that's very funny.
So a couple things kind of come to mind, Krista. One is... you know, one of the things I always encourage people to do is if you need to take a timeout, that you arrange for a follow-up. You know, even if it's, okay, I'm taking a timeout, I'll be back in 5 minutes, or I'll be back in 2 minutes, or I'll be back in, let's talk about this tonight. Because one of the things that often happens with people is, like, they say, I'm taking a timeout, but what they're really doing is they're escaping a difficult situation, and they just kind of avoid it, and they never come back to the situation.
Right.
The advantage of saying, okay, I'm going to come back in 5 minutes is that if, you can give him something else to do. So, you know, I'm envisioning because I know Miles is a little bit younger. You know, Miles, go get the timer for me, set it for 5 minutes, and come get me when it goes off.
Okay.
You know, something like
that.
So
he gets
to
have some sort of sense of control.
Yeah, exactly. Mom needs 5 minutes. Your job is to go get the timer, and that becomes your routine where it's like, he's always in charge of going to get the timer. He sets it, and he comes back and finds you in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And after 5 minutes, hopefully that's given you enough space to at least calm down enough. And even if you just sit with him for a couple more minutes while you calm down more,
yeah,
at least you've had a chance to get the space, and he's in charge of when you're going to come back together.
Right.
How does that feel?
That feels... That feels like it has a possibility because there's a role that he can play and that he knows when it's done and he can do that. Whereas before, when I've said I'll be back in 5 minutes or whatever, 5 minutes feels like eternity for him and he can't hang. He just sort of keeps coming, you know, okay, 5 minutes. I'm like, that was 5 seconds, sweetie. Let's discuss minutes versus seconds.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what comes up for anybody else?
This is Stacy. I have two other children as well, older and younger than my son, and it's difficult when he will go to that terrible place and curse or really be in your face in such a disrespectful way. And we know that if we interact with him at all at that point, it will just pour fuel on the fire. Whereas my other two kids, you know, no is no, and they might fuss a little bit, but it's nowhere near the explosion that it would be for my son. So it's difficult having different rules, very different rules, you know, walking away from someone being totally disrespectful and doing all the wrong things that, you know, we don't believe as a family. And then, you know... I think that's our difficulty in having different rules. You know, walking away.
So, yeah, and so I guess the question is, you know, can you go back to, you know, what's okay and what's not okay? And, I mean, what I'm hearing is that, you know, you want to handle, you know, if one of your kids does, if you know, if your son does X, then you would normally handle it one way. If your daughter does X, you'd handle it a different way, and you're having a difficult time with the inconsistency. Is that really kind of the story?
Right, right. And then what his siblings are seeing, it's seemingly okay for him to treat everybody that way, or, you know, that
I'm wondering if you can, you know, if you can take, if at the core of it, you know, job number one is, okay, we're triggered, let's calm down. And that's everybody's job, you know. And so it's kind of like whether he can do it on his own or if he needs help, the focus still is on calming down. And the same thing with your kids, if they're being disrespectful, it's because they've been triggered. And so the focus becomes on, okay, let's all calm down here. Your language is not appropriate. But, you know, so it's kind of like you're going down to the same common denominator, which is we've got a kid who's off balance, and we need to help them to calm down. How does that resonate for you?
That makes sense, even just verbalizing it so that the other two hear that I'm not just walking away, but I'm walking away because this is not okay, and I won't be, for example, I won't be called that, so I'm walking away, but, and I guess that makes sense.
So what's your fear around the situation? What are you afraid the other kids are going to think?
Well, they really don't know what's happening. You know, they don't understand why he flies off the handle the way he does. I really don't know.
Yeah. It sounds like you're afraid that they're. I mean, you started with, you know, you want to treat them differently because you can hold them to a different standard, but it also sounds like you want to protect them in a sense from his outburst. And I can't tell which is more.
Right. When we try to remove my younger daughter, which is a big trigger for him, he sort of takes everything out on her. She knows how to push his buttons. She's the third child.
Right.
And she won't come out of the situation. It's difficult sometimes.
So I mean, I think that's the piece of it is kind of if you take it down to the steps. So number one is prevention. So if you know, can you find a way that if he starts to escalate and you can see that she's starting to push his buttons, you know, what's the rule? And maybe you have a structure around this. So when we notice somebody's starting to get upset, what are we going to all do, whether it's him or whether it's you? You know, the family rule is when somebody goes upset, so you get upset, you do something. And actually, that's another code word. Elaine's family is really good with code words. Their code word for that was rope. So when you started to, when anybody started to get to the end of their rope, somebody would yell rope. And so it's kind of like, okay, everything needs to stop. The tempers are starting to escalate. Before it goes over the deep end, we need to either break or reclaim our brains or do something, but it's a way to kind of acknowledge and prevent stuff from escalating. So it sounds like there's some work there and then also some opportunity about educating your daughter around what's going on in
right.
a language that she would understand. Does that resonate?
Right. Mm-hmm.
What about anybody else?
So this is Ellen. One of the things I want to try to take aim on is that I feel like we've gone from the son who had these explosive periods, which he doesn't do, but I think which is good, but I also think there's a lot of avoidance on my part. I've gone from one side to the other, and I'm not sure how to address it, but like he'll now just want to come home and, like, be in his room for, like, 3 hours at a time, which I don't think is healthy. And I'll say, you know, you should get up and walk, but I don't put a consequence when he doesn't do it. So I do notice he's, like, just hanging a lot.
Yeah, so hang on a second. So what do you think's going on with you in that moment?
I think I'm just trying to keep things calm all the time. But
are you trying to avoid a trigger, or are you more running away?
I think I'm running away.
Okay. So you're in fight or flight, right?
Yeah.
So what could you do to reclaim your brain around this situation? What's another way you could look at the situation that would give you enough energy to go into action? Because that's really what happens, is that when you go into flight, you become lethargic. You kind of like, I'd rather sit on the couch or go crawl in bed with a good
yeah.
book. I don't want to have to deal with the situation, right? So you're in flight.
Yeah. That's me. That's where I am right now.
Right? So you're in flight. So, but you want to yeah. act. So a lot of times, you know, it's kind of like, okay, I'm running away. What can I do? So part of it could be just identifying what action you could take and saying, okay, here are three things that I could do right now. I could go to my room and read a book. I could have a casual conversation with him about how I'm gonna make some changes moving forward. I could actually come up with a plan for how I would want to manage this and regulate the time in his room. I could give him some boundaries. We could have, there's going to be something that you can do. And sometimes thinking about what you might do is enough to move you out of flight. The second tool that I would give you, well, let me just see, does that resonate with you, Helen?
Yes, it does.
Because the second tool I would give you is that sometimes we get so lethargic that we have to get mad about something to get to action. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's like with our kids, we don't want to get mad at our kids, but we can get frustrated with ourselves for not taking action. We can get more of like a social injustice thing that can't believe this is happening. I'm not going to let this get to me. I can do this. You know, just kind of you want to create some frustration, some conflict, some tension so that you can get off the couch and move forward. Does that resonate?
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth is that fight is more active than flight. And if you're a fleer and you know you want to get to action, you might need to go through conflict to get there. And a lot of us are conflict avoiders on top of everything else. But if you can create some tension and some conflict, meaning like the part of me that wants this to be to work the way that I want to is more important to me than the part of me that doesn't want to have an argument right now with my son. Because or is afraid of having, because that's usually what happens is that we don't pursue it because we don't want our kids to not like us for 5 minutes.
Right.
Or yell at us or whatever else it's going to be for, you know, some period of time. How does that resonate, Ellen?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. So anybody else have some thoughts just generally about triggers or their triggers or their kids' triggers?
How much do you, and at what point or do you at all sort of be transparent about this process with your kid as a learning process? So, for example, I've been known to say, look, I'd rather have you mad at me than not do what I know is best for you as a kid. Like, I sometimes will, like, articulate my intentions out loud. Like, I'm okay with you being mad at me. What I'm not okay with you is, you know, me not doing everything I know how to do to make you, you know, to help you be successful or whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm a transparency person. I mean, I talk to my kids about when I get triggered. In fact, this morning in the car when we were having a conversation, at one point I'm like, okay, what you said just triggered me. I need to take a deep breath. You know, it's letting your kids know what's going on for you, being aware of the conflict. I mean, Krista, what you were describing is like, there's part of me that really wants you to not be mad at me. And there's part of me that knows that this is the right thing as a parent to do. I'm
yeah.
kind of stuck in between, and I've got to make the choice. And right now it's more important to me because I know that you love me no matter how angry you get at me. And so I'm making that choice right now.
Yeah. I think for Miles, like, he needs to know what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
He needs. We're constantly deciding who's in charge.
Well, and that's the balance. It's kind of like it's less about being in charge, and it's more about who's less triggered, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think as your kids get older, you can make it more of a family job to help each other manage triggers. In fact, I remember recently my daughter. She's like, okay, Mom, do you need a little space? You seem a little upset. And it's kind of like, depending on how triggered you are, that might work, and that might be like what throws you over the deep end. But, you know, many of our kids are old enough that everybody's job can be to help each other to notice when the conversation is not being productive.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take some space. Let's all calm down. Let's call rope, whatever it is. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to do is just to do our wrap-up. So we are on page 29, and at the end of each of these calls, we answer four questions. So the first is, what did I pay most attention to? What kind of stood out, or what did I focus on the most in the call? And then, what's my clarity? What was my takeaway? The third thing is, what's the realistic action step? And lastly, what are you going to do to set yourself up for success? So take a minute, answer those questions. What's my clarity? What's my takeaway? What did I focus most on? What's an action step? And how do you set yourself up for success? And then I'd love to hear from a couple of you guys before we close. What were some of the ahas you had, and what are you going to do about it? Whenever anybody's ready, feel free to chime in.
This is Victoria. I'll go. My clarity is that I do have control, even when it seems like I don't. I actually do. My takeaway, actually, I think probably the takeaway and the clarity are about the same. I can't think of anything else for a takeaway. My action step is I'm going to make a list of ways to make things go smoother in the mornings, so hopefully neither of us will get as triggered. And the step up for success, isn't that the same thing as the action step? I'm sorry, I'm new.
So no, that's all right. So what you want to do is make sure it's kind of like, if you know that you want to move forward, is there anything you need to do to support yourself to make it easier to do it? So, you know, do you want to ask for help from somebody? Do you want to, you know, make sure that you're getting, you know, you do it on a day that you think you can be successful, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yes, actually, I think I'm going to ask my husband to support me and just giving me some time each evening to sort of, you know, go through these steps and go through the program and do what I need to do in order to get a bit more control over what's going on.
Okay. Great. Anybody else?
So this is Ellen. I think my clarity is I am definitely in flight mode, and I am the only one that can control that I need to get off the couch, which I'm sitting on right now, and that this is important enough to me. You know, I've gone through periods where I'm like, you know, he's 16 now, but he is just 16. I keep also say that the things that I'm seeing, some things I'm seeing, I have to really work with him on and just not let him control it. So I think one of the first steps, he has an appointment with his psychiatrist this afternoon, and maybe getting him to help a little bit more to encourage him to take some of the medication besides at school, and increase his antidepressant medication because I think he needs it. I think for him, and I hate saying that to him because he's very anti-medication, and so that's the struggle, but I think as his parent, I see when he was on a slightly higher dosage, he was in better spirits and just, you know, functioned better. So I might have to take control of that more and regulate the medication more and not let it be his decision for a while.
Right. So what's going to set you up for success on this one?
I think really sitting down and talking to him and following through. I tend to be really good of having the conversation and then not following through, because that's the difficult part. And I just know that if to be successful, I have to. So if we decide that together as a team that he really needs to be on the medication, then I need to put it in a box and I need to remind him. And I have to stand with him while he takes it, you know. Versus sometimes I would say I would do that, but then I wouldn't. So then he'd stop taking it.
Well, and it may be that, I mean, I think that it's a really tough decision to make. This is a difficult situation. So, you got to figure out what's important for you. And I guess I would say this to everybody. It's kind of like this may be one of those situations where you think about getting some extra coaching, Ellen, if I can say that kind of in front of everybody, to kind of help you through the decision-making process of how to handle what's going on with him and his medications. I'm happy to talk to you more about that if you want to.
Okay.
Anybody else?
This is Krista. I'm going to focus on reclaiming my brain and using the timer idea that you suggested. And also, I think Miles would find code words to be fun, which may be a good side benefit to them, like to just be able to if he helps me make code words when he can remind me when I'm being triggered and I can remind him when he's being triggered, we might be able to kind of reclaim our brain in a more amusing way, which tends to be something we both enjoy.
Yeah. The three, I'll just share them with everybody, because the three that I know that Elaine has at her house is one is rope when somebody's at the end of their rope. The second one is bubble gum when they have to tell you something that's going to be disappointing. And the third one is broccoli ice cream is the third one, which is somebody's obviously hungry and needs to eat before this conversation is finished.
Okay.
So, which I think is a fun one as well.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right. So we're at time. Anybody else want to do a quick checkout or a commitment before we hang up? Teresa, I haven't heard from you in a bit.
Well, I was just thinking that, I want to have a family meeting and talk about making it, you know, a rule that when somebody feels like they or someone else is getting escalated, you know, that to come up with a code word and that, you know, anyone can say it and then come up with, like, a plan. I really like that idea. It seems like a lot of this, like you talked about transparency and just, you know, talking to the kids and, you know, when we're not in a period when someone's being triggered and talking about triggers and what happens and what would be better ways to handle, like just kind of coming up with a plan. So that is what I think I'm going to do. So I'm just kind of sitting here trying to think it how I want to go about it. But
okay. So what do you need to do to get from where you're at to where you can move forward with it?
Well, I think I need to get my husband on board, and then we need to sit down with the kids at some point and, you know, put it on the calendar when we're going to do it. We usually try to do them on Sundays. And then, you know, just make that the whole – that's what the whole thing will be about. We'll just talk about this and kind of come up with our code word.
Great. Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks for being on the call this week. Our next call, the last one for this year, is on the 16th at noon. And look forward to connecting with everybody then. So, Ellen, do you have a minute and stay on for a second? I'll turn off the recording.
Okay.
Do you want me to
Sure.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, good luck.
Thanks.